Hello and welcome to the Australian Bitcoin Podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Wilczynski. Today we have a very special guest, Peter Danuweth from Networth Advisors. Peter is a financial advisor. He helps family offices and high net worth individuals decide on how to invest their money. Peter has been open-minded enough to see the potential of Bitcoin, and he has been helping his customers buy Bitcoin and hold it for many years now. He understands Bitcoin and helps them hold it the proper way, in a self-custodial way, or more correctly, in a joint custodial way. He utilizes multi-signature for this, where he holds one of the keys, his customers hold one of the keys, and a third-party service holds one of the keys, and in that combination of his keys to access the Bitcoin. We'll talk about the trade-offs and benefits of how he does it for his customers during the show, but we'll start off by finding out who is Peter. Then we'll talk about his prognosis of the Australian economy. We'll talk about Bitcoin as an asset class and how it compares to other assets. And finally, we'll talk about Bitcoin inheritance planning. He has helped his customers who have unfortunately passed away deal with those Bitcoin inheritance events. And I find that really interesting, Bitcoin inheritance, and that's going to be a big area in the future. I did have some audio issues during the show, but luckily you can hear Peter very well. So let's get on to the show and find out, who is Peter Danuweth?
Studied accounting and finance at university. I love finance and I detested accounting. It was not my favorite part of academia. After getting a degree in accounting and finance, moved into funds management, where I was at BT Funds Management for a very short period. That was one of Australia's largest fund managers at the time and one of the most successful funds management businesses in Australia. Then I left there to go into effectively mortgages credit, and I was there for nearly 10 years until one of my father's advisors and great mates said, "You're on the wrong side of the balance sheet. You need to get back to equities because all hell's about to break loose." And that was 2007. So that was some incredibly valuable advice in quite a timely fashion that, you know, 2007, 2008 moved from the debt side of the balance sheet to the equity side. And then basically been in and around investment advice from 2008 onwards in many sort of forms. We specialize in specialize in self-managed super funds, which is one of our retirement vehicles or pension plans in Australia. It's basically self-directed. Literally wrote a course on borrowing money in superannuation, in your superannuation fund, represented a industry body to ASIC, which is our SEC equivalent. We also represented in the industry to the ATO on the implications of it. So we've had, quite a deep experience in this. And then 10 years ago, 12 years ago now, I was introduced to Bitcoin when my brother said, "You should, you know, look into this." And sadly, because of all my formal training, I think that was a hindrance to me being open-minded about what this thing, Bitcoin, could be. So sadly, it took me another 5 years to really figure out what this thing, Bitcoin, was before I fully understood it and felt comfortable talking about it to clients. But it's been a huge evolution in my personal journey, in my thinking, in building my investment framework for our clients. It now plays an integral part in all of our client portfolios. And it's something, in light of what's happening in the world right now, I'd be in a very different mental state if Bitcoin didn't exist, in light of the turmoil that's happening in the economic markets right now.
Okay, so if that's your main kind of business, the wealth advisory, so you help high net worth customers who want to invest the personal wealth of a superannuation, you basically advise them, which assets to put it in and how they should allocate it.
Exactly. So we fundamentally help high net worth families. We look after a dozen families, and our promise to them is we help them make smart choices with their money. And that covers a whole range of things, from obviously the investment universe, so shares, property, bonds, commodities, and Bitcoin. But it also encompasses some, you know, alternative assets, like, you know, you might have venture capital, you might have all sorts of alternative infrastructure projects. There's a whole host of areas that you can get into, but there's also a very important thing that we do is basically looking at a family's structure, like legal entities that they're holding assets in, how they're holding them, and how they plan on, I guess, transferring those assets and those entities to their beneficiaries, which offers a huge value add from a client perspective. We can usually improve dramatically tax outcomes on transfer of significant amounts of wealth to the next generation. And if we've got time, we can structure in a way that's going to make it not only far more tax effective, but it's also going to provide much better asset protection from all sorts of, I guess, legal contest.
Right. Okay. So you provide the financial advice, and also you help set up the legal structures for that would be beneficial to your customers.
Yeah, we advise through that process with the help of the formal business that we have, which we've been running for probably close to a decade now, is Net Worth Advisors. Typically, it's very, very high touch. We've got a very small clientele base that we look after for that holistic financial advice. And then there's an ancillary business that I'm running, which basically looks after clients' Bitcoin advice and custody needs, called the bitcoinadvisor.com.
Like, how do you see the current economic and investment situation right now for Australians?
For Australians, I think we are sleepwalking towards a cliff, and not many people are really concerned about where we are right now. And to lay this down, we are towards the end of April in 2023. We have got the stock market near all-time highs. We've got, you know, our banks, our commodity producers, our miners are in great shape, and between the banks and the top two or three miners, they account for nearly 70% plus or more of the Australian Stock Exchange. So it's very easy to sort of get fooled into thinking that everything's rosy and, you know, everything's great. But if you look at, you know, the top four banks in Australia, they're effectively a leverage play on the Australian property market. And I think the Australian property market has got some question marks as to the immediate future. When I say immediate future, I say the next 1 to 2 years. We've got interest rates in Australia have moved from potentially sub 2% to over 5.5% in the space of just over 12 months. And 30% of mortgages are rolling out in the year 2023 from a fixed rate mortgage with a 2 in front of it to a variable rate mortgage with a 5.5 in front of it. So all of a sudden, the cost of borrowing in Australia has gone up dramatically. Now, this is a worldwide phenomenon. Australia is not not immune to that, but Australians have a very heavy focus on property. And typically, the only way to invest in property is with a relatively high degree of leverage. And when you're highly leveraged and interest rates have doubled or tripled, it makes holding that property very, very difficult to maintain. And this is where I think the property prices in Sydney anyway, and I think across the country, are off somewhere between 10 to 15% with a doubling or tripling of the interest rate. And my expectation is if we don't see interest rates drop fairly soon, we're going to see another 10 to 15% come off that property price in Australia. So I think it's a big concern. And we do have potential shades, or, you know, maybe some green shoots coming through in the Reserve Bank's latest meeting. They didn't raise rates when they were expected to, or they could have easily justified raising rates based on inflation, but they withheld raising rates, so there was no adjustment to the interest rate. So I just look at and think across the Australian property market, there's going to be some headwinds. If you look at the stock market in Australia, I think there's going to be some headwinds too. And then the bond market really isn't talked about in Australia because it's just not a big market relative to the world. So we typically use a lot of, you know, international bonds, things like that. So I won't sort of go into that from an Australian perspective. So I think we've got some big question marks. There are some big things to answer, and I don't think things are as rosy as everyone believes. And I think we're in for some tough times in the next 12 to 18 months if the Reserve Bank leaves things where they are.
Yeah. I heard you mention something, but we're, in terms of property prices, we're at all-time, we're close to all-time highs.
Yeah.
Property prices and all-time highs relative to income. And we've just risen the interest rates, but we're still pretty like low interest rate compared to like historically, if you go back 30, 40 years, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, it kind of like all-time high property prices and low interest rates, it kind of creates a very risky, it must be questioned, but it's a wise investment in property, but Australians love property.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is that there's a lot of potential risks with the interest rates going up and staying high now, and that would impact not only property prices but the broader economy, the share market in Australia, and basically everything.
I think there's downstream consequences of a negative or a drop in property prices. You know, because property is one of the key drivers for the Australian economy, and it's, you know, an absolute key driver for the major banks. The major banks in Australia have been some of the best performing banks in the world. There's some of them now the biggest banks in the world. And why is that? Because they're effectively a leverage play on Australian property markets. Now, you know, I think the property markets, the risks that everyone, and this is the problem that we're in right now, is for property and shares, basically everyone looks at the risks that have come up until this point. They look back in time to see what have the risks been, and what they fail to assess is what are the risks moving forward. And if you can see some of the risks moving forward, then all of a sudden it's a completely different investment analysis to where you want your money to be right now. And that's fundamentally what we do for a living. We basically look at how do we mitigate risks and how do we help make clients make smart choices about their money. And on a risk reward basis, that risk reward for investing in property right now has been flipped on its head. Unless you can find an absolute, you know, incredible deal in property, it's probably best to just sit on the sidelines until we get clear direction from the Reserve Bank that they're going to be lowering rates and providing liquidity to the market before going into this space. Because if you try and extrapolate out what your investment's going to be with interest rates where they are now, that the market hasn't really adjusted downwards where it can be, where prices are sustainable at this interest rate level. So I think what I'm trying to say is that the investment in property and shares right now, all of the risks are completely understated, because everyone's looking at in a historical context around the last 40 years, well, oh, don't worry, property always goes up. Well, yes, property always does go up, because that's been a default function of the fact that interest rates always went down. So for the last 40 years, we've had interest rates come from, you know, effectively 18%, give or take, all the way down to effectively zero. And when interest rates are coming down, it's very easy for property to go up. But when interest rates are going up, it's very easy for property to come down. And this is where, are we going to have this, you know, transitory inflation, to quote the Federal Reserve? Is it going to be transitory, or is it going to stay around? And it's looking like it might stay around, it might not. We might have periods of deflation, which is what we're looking at probably in the next 3 to 6 months. But then inflation will probably spike back up again. And all of a sudden, if everyone understood the risks involved with our current property market and our stock market, and we could assess all of the risks in front of us, all of a sudden Bitcoin looks like a very stable investment and a very suitable option in light of all of the risks in the market. And this is where I spend a lot of my time trying to educate clients on how do we educate clients on the fact that there are huge risks in the property market, huge risks in the stock market, and on a relatively adjusted basis, there's very little risk with this Bitcoin. This is where I spend a lot of time trying to educate clients around the network metrics, because if they understand the network metrics, they understand that the dollar value of the network is effectively a function of the metrics of the network. And what do I mean by the metrics of the network of Bitcoin? Well, fundamentally, what I'm talking about is the hash rate, the number of nodes, and the fact that there's a block every 10 minutes. If clients can understand those three things that effectively are all going up and to the right, they're all going in the right direction, they can understand and get comfortable with the fact that they can invest more money in Bitcoin. And this is where, once they understand the network metrics, all of a sudden putting 5 to 10% of a client's net assets into Bitcoin doesn't seem like a bad idea when you compare that to the relative risks and investment options that are out there right now. And so one of the things that we spend a lot of time doing is effectively delineating between what is risk and what is volatility. And sadly, those two terms have been conflated when it comes to Bitcoin. And people think that because Bitcoin goes up and down in value in with wild volatility, they think that is wildly risky. But it couldn't be further from the truth. To me, Bitcoin represents the least risky investment that someone can take. But note, I did not say it's the least volatile. It will be the most volatile investment and the least risky. And this is where it's a complete paradigm shift for investors to get their heads around that. How can something be risk, well, not risk-free, but really, you know, very low risk, but have high volatility?
Volatility means short-term risk. So in the short term, if you put $500,000 or whatever into Bitcoin today, it could literally drop by 50% in a month. So there is that kind of short-term risk. But yeah. I agree with you. If you take like a slightly longer term, 3 or 4 year outlook on Bitcoin, there's still risk. I never say it's not, there's no risk, but given that people usage of Bitcoin is increasing in the economic environment, over 3 years, I think it is a very wise bet, in my opinion.
I agree. And, you know, and this is where, you know, we don't typically make investment decisions for less than 2 to 5 years here. So I can state with confidence that, you know, if we're planning for intergenerational wealth, which is literally my primary focus, how do we preserve what, you know, our families have built, and how do we pass that down successfully, free of dilution or inflation or any other thing that can degrade the value in that for that family? This is where Bitcoin plays a huge part. And understanding that these families are planning for effectively 10 plus years out, then that gives me great confidence in putting a higher allocation to Bitcoin.
So when you have these families, and I'm guessing these are people probably like in their 40s, 50s, 60s, so maybe somewhat older, not so tech savvy, and probably a bit more conservative. Yeah. And, you know, if they ask you, okay, you know, I want to invest my money, and you tell them, well, you should put some of it into Bitcoin, do they look at you like you're some crazy, like, okay, this guy's a joker, I need to get somebody serious, or do they think that's great advice? Like, how does that work?
You know what? It depends. It's been an evolution. And I'll sort of explain that, you know, when we first started talking to clients about Bitcoin, it was, hey, here's this thing we should look at. It has the potential to do a 10 or 20 or a 50x. Let's put a little allocation into your portfolio of 1 to 2%. And that was typically a very easy discussion to have with clients, because 1 to 2% meant if it went to zero, then it was going to be a bad day in the stock market. That was basically the equivalency of it. However, they basically stood to gain 100x on their money. So 1% allocation to Bitcoin could effectively double their net assets. You know, for a potential bad day in the stock market is the only downside to investing 1%. Most clients were happy to take that, you know, that investment advice and do that, because it was a good risk-adjusted investment. However, when you get to 5 to 10% of a client's allocation, that requires a little bit more work, a little bit more time, you know, a huge amount of educating and, you know, understanding where the client's at as far as knowledge around Bitcoin, and getting them to a point where they feel comfortable to have 5 to 10% of their net assets in Bitcoin. Then you know, that's a very different process, and that takes a much longer time frame to get that done. And that's typically one-on-one conversations, answering any concerns or questions that clients have, answering things that they've heard that they might sort of think of that, you know, is going to be a detriment to their investment in this space. But when we say 5 to 10%, 5 to 10% doesn't change anything in their life if it were to go to zero. And I don't mean to speak about this flippantly, because I take my job as a fiduciary of a client's assets very, very seriously. There's no higher moral or legal obligation that I've got than to, you know, look after that money for them. And it's probably imprudent not to have that type of weighting or allocation to Bitcoin in light of what's coming down the road. And this is where, you know, I spend a lot of my time looking at what's coming to try and deliver the best possible outcomes for clients. And this is where Bitcoin to me is a perfect fit in delivering a host of, I guess, risk mitigation tools to a client's portfolio. It potentially has the ability to dampen volatility. It has the potential to improve, you know, outsized returns. And it just is a very different asset to what's currently available in there. And if we look at, say, stocks, bonds, and shares, which are the three major asset classes, all of those asset classes are fundamentally what I call at peak. Well, they're at saturation levels from a debt perspective. So now all of those three assets are now correlated because there's so much debt in those assets. So I'll just quickly run through it. In the stock market, you've basically got all-time high debt levels because you've had stock buybacks for the last 20 years, and you've got the highest corporate, you know, highest amount of corporate bonds that, you know, we've seen to date. Never been higher. So there's all-time high debt levels in the stock market. If you look at the property market, all-time high debt levels in the property market. And if you look at the bond market, although it fundamentally is a debt, but we've reached saturation levels in the bond market because the two largest buyers of bonds in the last, you know, 20 or 30 years has been the Chinese government and the Japanese government. And those two countries are no longer buying US government bonds. So everyone's tapped out. We can't get any more debt in the system. And that's why you're seeing, from an investment perspective, all assets are now rising and falling in line with each other, because everything is now at peak debt. So before, you used to be able to create a balanced portfolio where you'd have roughly 25% bonds, 25% cash, 25% shares, 25% property. And as property had come down, shares would go up. As, you know, property would go up, bonds would come down. Like, there were all of these things that sort of interplayed that basically meant that you can have a really well-balanced portfolio where as things were rising, things were falling, and they sort of all evened out. Now, that's not possible. Everything's going up together or down together. And enter Bitcoin. This is a bearer asset that has no risk of default or falling over from, it has no counterparty risk. And this is a huge, huge thing for finance, for investment. And I don't think it gets enough attention. The counterparty risk in our system right now, because of the high debt levels, is enormous. And if you self-custody your Bitcoin and you look after it, you have no counterparty risk. And this is the only major asset class out there other than really gold. But I'd speculate that gold actually has quite the counterparty risk, particularly if you're buying it in an ETF, or alternatively you're buying it at the Perth Mint or another provider. There's always going to be counterparty risk, but Bitcoin is the only truly bearer asset out there. So
yeah,
clients should have some.
Yeah, but if there's so much money printing and so much debt right now, and there's just not many good places for people to put their money, like you said, property, somewhat risky, shares, again, very leveraged. Bonds, I don't know which kind of bonds, but if we're talking about American debt bonds, I mean, I don't know if I want to be buying American debt. They don't look super trustworthy.
Yeah. So ironically, that's the best out there.
Yeah.
As bad as that looks.
That's supposed to be the best, yeah.
That's better than everything else. That's why I'm like, oh, and this is where if you are going to play in that bond space, which we don't, but if you are, and probably it's not a bad place now, but, you know, there's a big caveat on this that you want to be in very short-dated bonds of very high quality. So typically government AAA rated bonds, if that even exists now, but you want to have the highest rated bonds that are very short dated so that you've got very little chance of losing your money. There are a host of things that I think clients need, you know, or clients have asked me about. And this typically is like anyone's journey in Bitcoin. And if you think back to, you know, how you started out in Bitcoin, I can tell you from a personal point of view, you know, I basically went through four stages of Bitcoin, which probably all of us have gone through, which is that'll never work. Governments will shut it down. Oh, have a look at this new Bitcoin. It's going to be better than Bitcoin. And then the capitulation, which is, oh, okay, let's just buy Bitcoin. And so I view my job as, you know, the most important part of the advice process that I can deliver to clients is to help them move through those three or four stages of becoming a Bitcoiner as quickly as possible by leveraging the mistakes that I made and helping them avoid those. One of the things I'm most proud of from a personal point of view is that I have helped clients basically avoid any catastrophic losses. We haven't lost any Bitcoin. We've avoided things like Three Arrows Capital. We've avoided Terra Luna. We've avoided Celsius. We've avoided BlockFi. We've avoided Genesis, you know, all of these yield products. You know, we deliver very conservative advice. And this is where if people understood the upside that is in front of Bitcoin, I don't think there's any way that they would invest in these yield products that were available in the last 36 months. And to me, it just is not a great risk-adjusted return to think, oh, I can get 3 or 4% extra on my Bitcoin to lend it out to someone who's then going to go and lend it to a Three Arrows Capital or someone else who's just completely irresponsible with my Bitcoin. That is not a good trade. In fact, it's downright stupid to think that, hey, for an extra 3% or 4%, I'm going to let someone gamble with my Bitcoin. That is just such short-term thinking. And this is where one of the things that we deliver to clients is a pretty compelling framework for Bitcoin and what we think the future holds for it, that you don't need to go chasing yields in Bitcoin because there are no yields in Bitcoin yet. The only yield in Bitcoin is you thinking you're smarter than the rest of the market. And just look at the law of averages. 99% of the market is not smarter. So use that as a tool to just buy Bitcoin, sit on it for as long as you can, and keep adding to your pile. That's the best investment strategy with the broadest success that you can hope for.
When you tell voice customers, do they listen to you, or like, do they actually, we still want to try that?
I've been very fortunate that I have had none of my clients do that. I have had maybe three clients leave, and one client left to put money in BlockFi, one client left to put money in Celsius, and another client left and sold down the majority of their Bitcoin holdings. And I'm like, that I would like to think that that would not have happened if we were advising them. And, you know, sad to see, you know, clients who we've introduced to Bitcoin think that there's a shortcut to getting rich in Bitcoin. There's just no way around it. And this is where I think we all have our own personal journey of proof of work that we need to, you know, burn our hand on the stove or stub our toe and make our own mistakes so that we learn that, oh my goodness, this is a bearer instrument of that basically has the highest consequences that one could have for an investment. And this is where I can't stress the importance of this enough, that, you know, my role in my client's life is to make sure that they've got their Bitcoin at the end of the day. And that's something I'm really proud that we've been able to deliver to clients, basically safe custody, safe harbor, and very conservative advice that tells them, just hold your Bitcoin, buy more, and when the price drops, buy a little more. And if you need to sell some for personal reasons, then hey, sell some. But you know, for the large part, this is the best investment they're ever going to find. They just need to be patient. It'll all come good.
I 100% agree with that. And that's part of the reason why I really wanted to have you on. And I think why you saw gain so much popularity in the Bitcoin space lately, because that is exactly the correct advice. What you say is what people should be doing and what I advise people to be doing. And that's kind of what I try to do with my service, Hardblock, also. Just an easy way to stack Bitcoin, dollar cost average, and put into your custodial wallet. It's very easy to sell people. They kind of snake oil you and promise them, like, you can get better returns. Yeah, I'll help you invest in Celsius and you can get better returns. And you can promise people that, but then people get burned.
That's the problem. And this is that short-term thinking. You know, yeah. I plan on doing this for the next 10 or 20 years. I don't need to make a shortcut. My number one responsibility, and this is where I'm so happy to be talking to you, and I'm so glad, you know, we share the same, you know, values in this, is that all we need to do is safely custody this thing. That's all. People just find a way to fuck that up. Oh my goodness, you've got one job. That's it. Just look after the Bitcoin. Everything else will sort itself out. So, yeah.
Well, I think a lot of investment, it's about discipline. And the discipline is about sometimes not touching things too much. Kind of Warren Buffett kind of goes into this, and there's also the investment philosophy, you know, I forget the name, but the kind of OG of investment, Graham.
Benjamin Graham. You know, value investing.
Yeah, that's right. You know, like, and he talks about this Mr. Market. Mr. Market moves up and down, but you don't have to act based on what Mr. Market does. And I think it comes down to this kind of discipline. Sometimes the best thing to do is to avoid, to kind of not do anything, you know, sit, like, stay on your investment and don't touch things too much, because the more you try to play with them, the worse it actually becomes for you. Does that make any sense?
It's perfect sense. But it's counterintuitive to getting the best return, because, you know, we're programmed in this ADHD, short-termism, instant gratification society, that we need to do something in order to get a return or to make something happen. And this is where I call Bitcoin, I haven't used this term in a long time, and I don't think I've used it on a pod before, but, you know, Bitcoin is the ultimate fat man's investment strategy, meaning all you have to do is buy it and then do nothing. Nothing, zero, nothing. Just sit on it, protect it, make sure it's self-custodied properly. And that's the best way. That's the most, you know, that's the most you're going to get out of it. And this is where most people feel like they need to be trading, they need to be doing something. And it's counterintuitive, because they're only basically losing Bitcoin along the way. Very rarely that I've met across my travels anyone who's outperformed Bitcoin.
Most of my customers are above 30. And I do have that customers in that demographic of 40, 50 who have some money, and they want to set up that kind of inheritance, but they don't really know how to do it.
Well, let's go from the start and think about what inheritance planning is. So inheritance planning, when you are talking about transferring Bitcoin to your beneficiaries, two things basically are at play. You need to have effectively a legal transfer of ownership of that Bitcoin, and then you need to have the actual transfer of that Bitcoin. Now, legal ownership is very easy to do, because it's basically written into the will. It's written into the, well, it's done through the probate process in Australia, where you basically gain legal ownership of whatever is bequeathed to you. However, there is a very real problem with a bearer asset, which none of the other assets that you can inherit have. So if you think about property, if you think about shares, if you think about bonds, if you think about commodities in the stock exchange or ETF sense, all of those things have legal ownership that ties back to our legal system. And it's not a bearer instrument. So no one needs to actually physically own that, because there's a legal register of who owns what. And so when you pass away, all of that legal ownership can move to whoever you left that to. Now, Bitcoin is the only asset that doesn't have that legal register, where the state, or alternatively these institutions, have the ability to transfer ownership. You actually have to be transferring ownership in a visceral sense, and you need to be able to do that when you've passed. And this has been a bugbear of mine that I've tried to solve for myself, that I've tried to solve for my, you know, families that I look after, for all of our clients. And the problem is that you have a secret in your 24-word seed phrase or your hardware wallet, however you set that up. And the difficulty is, how do you give that to your beneficiaries if you're not here to give it to them? How do you educate them on basically receiving this Bitcoin, looking after this Bitcoin, effectively caring for it, you know, safely custodying it, when you're not here? And this is where I believe a multi-sig collaborative custody arrangement provides the highest possibility of transferring your Bitcoin from the grave, because you've got multiple people who you trust working on that so that they can get that, you know, that Bitcoin from your dead hands to your beneficiary safely. And this
just
is
to clarify, sorry again, but just for those people who don't know multi-sig is a way where in Bitcoin, if there's some Bitcoin, there's multiple keys and you need multiple people to have access to that Bitcoin. So if there's a two of two multi-sig, you need two people's signatures to get access to that Bitcoin. If you have like three of two multi-sig, you need two out of three people with voice keys to get access.
We set it up in a two of three multi-sig, but if clients want a three of five multi-sig, then we're happy to do whatever they want. But, you know, a default might be to set up a client with Unchained or Casa. Those clients own that account. And what we would do then is we would set up a hardware wallet for them so that the client has one key plus the account with Unchained or Casa. And then we have the third default key to if they ever need us to sign a transaction. And so what this allows, when you've got a two of three multi-sig arrangement set up like that, is that if the client loses their hardware wallet or loses their 24 words or they pass away and the family can't find any of that information, that hardware wallet or the 24 words, if you provide the correct documentation to Casa or Unchained, then you can arrange for, and this is what we've done on multiple occasions, we would invite the family in, we would set up a new hardware wallet, we would set up a new account in the executor's name or the beneficiary's name. And what that would do is we would then, with the help of, say, Unchained and myself and the authority of the executor of the estate, or alternatively the beneficiaries, we would then sign a transaction that would move those Bitcoins to the beneficiary's account. And this is where one of the key pieces of information to make sure that that process doesn't get corrupted, that I think is really critical for this, and this is something we provide all clients, is having a Bitcoin estate plan protocol. Now, this is a document that we prepare for all our clients. And in that document, you need to have a number of things in there to avoid any corruption of that process. And I'll just start very briefly from the top. So in that process, you want to know all of the accounts that you have with any exchanges like yours, or there might be alternative exchanges. There might be some digital wallets that you hold on your desktop. There might be hardware wallets that you've got. You want to have a firm documented list of everything, every possibility of where your Bitcoin could be. Then you want to document the process of who's involved with your two of three or three of five multi-sig setup. So you want to name names. You want to name. So in all of my client documentation, Peter Dunworth is mentioned in that document. They've got full access to my personal details. They can call me anytime. They've got my email, and they've got the ability to basically use me to sign a transaction and move that across. So you need to have those documents in there. An ancillary thing that we put in that document as well is you might want to have a trusted expert in Bitcoin, not only to make sure that the process runs smoothly, but you want them to overlook the process to make sure that everyone involved in that process is doing what they should be. And that's critical. most of our beneficiaries who inherit Bitcoin have got no idea on Bitcoin. They just look at it and think, oh, well, it's an asset. What's the big deal about this? And they don't really comprehend the magnitude of what lies in front of us. And having that Bitcoin estate plan protocol, they effectively need a Sherpa or a concierge or an advisor to take them through that process to then deliver a multi-sig collaborative custody setup for them when they inherit it. Because I think that's the safest process, particularly for a noob into Bitcoin. In the number of occasions that we've basically facilitated a transfer from a departed, we've been able to not only smoothly transition to the new beneficiary, but the beneficiary's been educated along the way, and they now have an understanding of how important the processes and protocols and systems are that we've set up to keep their Bitcoin safe. This is how we do it, and I understand that everyone will have their own system, but I can tell you, as someone who has transferred Bitcoins from, you know, people who have passed to their beneficiaries multiple times now, this is a protocol that works. So it might be, you know, a way to look at and think about integrating for yourself.
So basically, the key points of how you set it up, you use a free of two multi-sig, where you use a service like Casa, and you have one of the keys, and your customer has one of the keys, and then you also create a document outlining where all the possible Bitcoin are, and who's supposed to get it, and how to kind of recover it.
Exactly right.
Right. And the benefit in that situation also is, since you do a two or three multi-sig, if the customer loses their key, you still have it. So it's, Casa has one key and you have one key. So they can still, if the customer loses their key, it's still recoverable with the Bitcoin. Is that correct?
Correct. And this is something that we do, particularly for new clients who come on board with that self-custody, is, you know, one thing that would absolutely horrify me is if we were to set up clients in a single sig wallet, buy the Bitcoin, transfer it to their single sig wallet, and they walk out the door with 24 words and a hardware device and no default backup. To me, that I find terrifying. And the last thing I want is someone who we've helped educate and put into this space, send them out destined to basically muck it up. And this is where that multi-sig collaborative custody really helps, because we've had a number of clients basically leave and walk out the door and come back to us within a month and say, Peter, I'm sorry, I've lost the 24 words, I've lost my hardware device, have I lost my Bitcoin? And I can say, hand on heart, no, you haven't lost your Bitcoin. We're going to recover it. We'll show you how to do it, but we need your help in recovering it. We can't do it without you, and we need you to do a number of things to do it. But we've done that literally a number of times, where clients have potentially stood to lose millions of dollars in Bitcoin, but because we're in a multi-sig collaborative custody arrangement, we were able to recover it. So not only is it really good from an inheritance perspective, it's actually really good from basically protecting yourself from yourself.
Right. And another key point of how you do things, and that's very, very important, and maybe people didn't appreciate it, but you don't actually have access to voice funds, and neither does Casa.
No. The client accounts that we set up with Unchained or Casa or wherever it might be, the accounts are in their name, not my name, not my business name. That's their accounts that they own. And yeah, if we want access to it, or we need to do anything with any of those businesses, they want effectively notarized documents saying that we have authority to do that, which, you know, we know those teams really well. And, you know, they're running big businesses now. So it's important to note that nothing can be done in that multi-sig arrangement without the client's wishes. And most importantly, I think the recovery of those Bitcoins are possible in that. So you don't need to be 100% self-reliant.
Yeah. But yeah, so you've been doing the kind of the wealth advisory business, and now it seems you had a lot of interest in what you're doing with Bitcoin. From what I understand, you started as kind of a separate business, Bitcoin Advisor. BitcoinAdvisor.com is the website.
It is a new thing we're trialing, and I think this has been born out of the fact that there's been so much interest on our family office. We've wanted to deliver what we do on a broader scale. We understand that, you know, not everyone is basically a high net worth family that we can, you know, give full holistic advice to, but we understand that there's a gap in the market for delivering effectively a multi-sig collaborative custody arrangement with someone who's had 6 or 7 years experience at delivering that to clients to date. So I'm yet to see an alternative service that does that at this point in time. And one of the things with that, and part of the reason for testing this out, is to effectively share our protocol with anyone who wants to use it, whether you're a client or not. We're not concerned if you are a client, we'd love to look after you, or if you're interested, we'd love to look after you. But even if you're not, there's a really great page that is effectively a comparison site that talks about all of the services that we deliver relative to every other service provider, Grayscale Trust, ETFs, self-custody, and effectively the paid custody service on the exchanges. And we go through all the services that we deliver to clients, and we put that up there not as a way to, we do that to educate potential clients as to what are the services that we're delivering, but we also do that as a way to, if someone looks at our service and says, look, I actually want to look after this myself, it's a great checklist for people to basically go through and make sure that they're covering off on everything that we would do for them. And that's really important for me, that, you know, if you're going to do it yourself, that's fabulous. That's the whole idea of Bitcoin. You want to empower everyone to do it themselves, but there are going to be some people who don't do it. So if I go through, there are about maybe 23 to 25 things that we do for clients. So I'll just run through what that is. We basically deliver advice. We've got a Bitcoin concierge service that delivers a Bitcoin estate plan protocol with built-in redundancies, collaborative custody. We provide education. We provide an escrow compatible service. Our fees are relatively low compared to, you know, what's available in the market. We deliver geographically distributed keys on institutional grade custody with key monitoring that has access to Lightning Network or Liquid Network if needed. We have multi-sig with multiple backups, no rehypothecation, on-chain proof of ownership, own your own keys. Quarterly key checks are done with quarterly seminars with Bitcoin experts from around the world. And this basically delivers a multi-sig collaborative custody arrangement that is recoverable, self-sovereign, self-certifiable proof of ownership on-chain, delivering self-custody with built-in redundancies and software backups. It's probably the most comprehensive service I've seen when it comes to that multi-sig collaborative custody. And we do a lot of things that I'm not aware of anyone else who does that. So we use that list as effectively a checklist for people who are thinking about doing this, that if they'd like to use our service, please reach out. We'd love to look after you. But if you don't want to, then there's effectively a checklist there that you can do it yourself with. Yeah, in the main wealth advisory, we just provide a much broader range of services that aren't limited to Bitcoin. So we cover off on the broader investments that we talked about before, stocks, bonds, property, commodities. But from the BitcoinAdvisor.com, it's specifically focused on the client's Bitcoin assets and how to ensure that we can safely transfer those Bitcoins upon death or an accident to their estate and to their beneficiaries.
In 10 years, what do you think the Bitcoin price will be?
I think in 10 years, the price will be over 10 million US a coin, which gives us over a 300x return in the next 10 years. I think that's a relatively fair way of looking at it. There's a lot of money that needs to pile into Bitcoin in the next 10 years. There's a lot of uncertainty. There's a whole host of things that are about to fall over. You know, we're approaching the end of the debt spiral. What happens to the debt spiral if something happens? You know, all of a sudden we've got a bearer asset that can't be altered. You know, it's an immutable ledger. There is so much upside with Bitcoin. I think 10 million in 10 years is a fair estimate, and I think it could be a lot more.
So that's it for the show. I hope you enjoyed that. If you did, give us a rating on your podcast app player. Keep stacking Bitcoin and see you next time.